know, this idea of DEI has invaded us all over and, you know, all sorts of parts of this country, but it's being rejected more and more. People are like, I've had my fill. We're done with this. But it's been infused into education. Maybe no more dangerous of a place to do that than in medical education. Medical schools have been pushing the idea of DEI, lowering standards, allowing people in, you know, oh, well, we'll let them in because of their gender, the color of their skin, or whatever it might be, their country of origin. I prefer my doctors to be qualified. I don't care their gender. I don't care their race. I don't care their country of origin. I care that they are qualified to do whatever task they need to do for me or to me. Makes sense? My next guest is Congressman Greg Murphy. He is a doctor. He represents North Carolina's 3rd Congressional District. By the way, I'm in North Carolina today, too. He's on the ocean side of the state. I'm up in the mountains. He's a urologist by trade. Doctor, nice to have you here.
Morning, Steve. Thank you for having me, and welcome to North Carolina.
Beautiful place. A little cloudy today, but it'll be fine. You can see the mountain. Well, you could see the mountains behind me normally, but they're a little clouded in today. Anyhow, let's talk about DEI and in medical schools. Look, you're a practicing urologist. You told me during the break you still see patients, even though you don't get paid for it, because you like doing the job of being a doctor. But all of this, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is dangerous. You say no more so than in medical education. What do you mean by that?
You know, Steve, this whole DEI thing bared its ugly head when I was on the board of trustees of my alma mater, and the president there, who abused her authority as a physician, really pushed all of this. And diversity, equity, and inclusion, diversity in all things except opinion, inclusion in everything except if you don't have that opinion, and equity means lowering the bar for all. And so when this has happened with medical school, the AAMC, which is the American Association of Medical Colleges and Universities, picked their most recent president, and his number one charge, number one plan and goal was to put DEI in all medical schools. And so now, where you thought, you know, medical school is thought to be the top, to be the take the cream of the crop, to get in and you learn about science and you learn about taking care of patients. And so now we have three components in medical school. Number one, DEI in the admissions process. Two, DEI in the curriculum. And then DEI in the hiring, firing, promoting, and giving tenure to professors. And it is absolutely corroded, infested, and is destroying the entire medical field. You know, they love to tout this quote study, which I'd love to see, because I, you know, we're taught in medical school really not to believe things until you can rigorously look at them. That went out the window during the pandemic. But they're saying that people do better when they're looking at a doctor of their color.
That makes no sense. And let me jump in there, because I'll just be clear. Let's talk about me, right? I'm a right of center commentator. I'm politics of the day. So therefore, I'm a white supremacist and I'm all these. That's what they would smear me as, right? None of that makes sense. My urologist is a black doctor. Do I care? No, he's very good. My GP, my general physician, my family doc is a woman from Romania. Do I care? No, she's very good. We all think the world of her. She's great. So this idea that somehow I need to pick my doctor based on race, country of origin, or gender is absolutely ludicrous. My personal experience. What say you?
It's absolutely true. You know, the gal that runs my office in D.C. is black. My assistant now in my urology office is black. I don't give a damn. What I care about is if they do the right job. So I was just about to say, if their theory of that, you know, you only do better with people that look like you, et cetera, what are we going to do? Go back to segregated waiting rooms? Go back to segregated doctors?
Well, sadly, doctors, some of these colleges and universities are having, you know, graduation ceremonies for African Americans only, and no white students allowed to attend certain events. So this, you're not far off the mark here of what happened in the 1950s and 60s that we eradicated. We eradicated right. That ridiculous behavior beginning in 1957 with Dwight Eisenhower's first civil rights bill. We got rid of all that nonsense. And now it's rearing, as you say, its ugly head. It has no place here. So you have introduced a bill. Tell us about this bill you've introduced to get rid of all this DEI nonsense at medical schools.
Yeah, it's called the EDUCATE Act, and it has an acronym. I can't remember it half the time. Pardon my senility. But it's basically saying that we want the DEI nonsense to get out of medical schools. And what we're going to do is say it can't be in the admissions process, can't be in the curriculum, can't be in the hiring and firing of professors and that. And if you do that in the medical school, your federal funding is gone. And there are a lot. This is where we have our teeth, is federal funding. And it's funny how all of a sudden everybody's coming out of the woodwork to say, hey, don't go so fast. Well, I'm sorry. You know, at some point you have to draw a line and say enough. This is enough. And when the head of the American Association, the AAMC, this is his primary goal. What are we doing about the doctor shortage? What are we doing about the cost of medicine being too much? What are we doing about the fact that residents are coming out of surgical training now and don't have the full tools to do this? Let's actually get back to real issues that confront medicine rather than a progressive leftist agenda.
Yeah, agreed with everything you've just said right there. The question I have for you in this very divided Congress, Republicans have the advantage barely. With all these cowards, and I do refer to them, Ken Buck and so forth, as cowards. You campaign for the job, you beg people to vote for you, and then you quit the job because it got too tough. Ken Buck, you can run along, but I have no respect for that kind of behavior, or for Kevin McCarthy, or for any of the others that quit partway through the job because their feelings were hurt or whatever the hell the problem was. But in this divided Congress, can this make it? Will this make it? Or is it just something that has to be parked until you have Republican majorities in both houses?
I don't, you know, truth be told, I asked this question to a ranking member of a leading committee in Congress who's a friend of mine. And I said, what do you think? And I said, what do you think about the concept of this being something so divisive and us being doctors only by the amount of melanin in our skin? And the leading Democrat said, this is nonsense. This is nonsense. Yeah, we're going to have to do something about it. His party would never let that happen, and is in divided Congress. This is what it is. But, you know, this is just the beginning. This is going to happen. This is going to happen, just like the president of Harvard was thrown out.
Absolutely. There's a sea change out there going on. I want to ask you, I got about a minute left here, Doctor. And real quickly, I would just want to take a little pulse of the politics of North Carolina, which we've been doing here for the last 3 or 4 days, Ivy and I have. North Carolina, to me, is not a swing state. North Carolina is a red state. I believe it'll be a red state come November. It'll back Donald Trump. I also believe that you will have a Republican governor for the first time in a couple of terms. What do you say? What do you feel? You got about 30 seconds.
Well, we have about an R3 advantage. And I'm very optimistic that Republicans, especially in judiciary races, I'm really high on Dan Bishop. Dan is a friend of mine. He's further right than I am. He's just more cantankerous. But we need a Republican attorney general, because regardless of who's in the governor's house, we need an attorney general that's actually going to prosecute the rules of the state. The last 16, 18, whatever years, we've had a Democrat who just said, no, I'm not going to prosecute the laws. I'm going to do what I want to do. That's not the job. And so,
no, the job is to enforce the laws. And I agree with you, Congressman. I have to leave it there. And that would be true at the southern border. It would be true on violent crime. It would be true on crimes here in your state. It should be true across the board. Enforce the laws we have in the books. The place will be a better place. Doctor, I greatly appreciate you being here. Greg Murphy represents North Carolina 3. Thank you for the conversation. Really well done.
All right. Enjoy North Carolina.
I will, sir. Thank you. I'll take a break here. It is the Steve Gruber. When it comes to investing, I'm always wondering, am I doing the right thing? And that's why I say you should always get a second opinion. This is Steve Gruber, and one of the people I ask about where to put my money is Nick Hopwood of Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth, Michigan. You see, Nick has over 25 years of investing experience and nearly $300 million under management. Plus, Nick and his team at Peak Wealth are fiduciaries, which means they invest in your best interest, not their own. Many advisors in the industry don't do any planning at all. As certified financial planners, the Peak Wealth team creates comprehensive, holistic financial plans based on your goals and what's important to you. Reach out to Peak Wealth for a second opinion today on your investments, fees, and to make sure you won't run out of money in retirement. By working with Nick, you can retire with peak confidence. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/Gruber. That's peakwm.com/Gruber.
Peak Wealth Management.
Get ready, Michigan. There's a new opportunity in town. The Michigan Achievement Scholarship. 7 out of 10 high school seniors could get up to $27,500 over 5 years just by filling out the new and simplified FAFSA. Don't miss your chance to let the state shape like a hand give you a hand in paying for college. Check it out at mi.gov/achievement. Brought to you by the Michigan Achievement Scholarship and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
At the Michigan Chamber, we're on a mission to help job providers and entrepreneurs succeed. When Michigan businesses can grow and thrive, so do our families, communities, and local economies. We're here to protect, to connect, and to strengthen. That means powerful advocacy from our top-ranked lobbying team, virtual and in-person events to make connections and support your learning and training needs, and proven product and services to help save you time and money. Join with us. We're stronger together.
To learn more about the Michigan Chamber or how to become a member, visit michamber.com.